One thing at a time. If I could get to the bottom, I might be able to find Devereaux's gun. I might be able to hide somewhere. If I could evade Ammon long enough, Diesel might find me. I had maybe 20 steps left, and I heard a rope drop. Moments later, the first man rappelled down. A second rope dropped, and two more men descended. By the time I reached the last step and was on bedrock, there were four men in total. Three were dressed in black fatigues, and they were all armed. The fourth man was Rutherford. He was also dressed in black fatigues, but he looked uncomfortable in them, smoothing them out when his feet touched ground. As far as I could see, he wasn't armed. Devereaux lay motionless on the ground. No one paid any attention to him. Just beyond him was a gaping black hole that I suspected was the entrance to another tunnel. "Someone should check on Professor Devereaux," I said. One of the men went over and took a closer look.
"Dead," he said.
"Really?" Rutherford asked. "Are you certain? Well then, I suppose we should move on. After all, Mr. Ammon is waiting."
Rutherford turned to me.
"Mr. Ammon is very excited about this. This is a holy mission for him. Yes, yes, actually for all of us who serve him."
"Serve him? You mean as his assistant?"
"Yes, yes, of course, but also as a disciple. Mr. Ammon feels that he holds the sleeping beast within him. Once he has the Avaritia stone and the ceremony is performed, Mammon will finally awaken and rule the earth."
Rutherford wiped his sweaty palms on his fatigues.
"It will be glorious, glorious."
"So you believe in Mammon?"
"Very definitely. Mr. Ammon feels very strongly about Mammon. It came to Mr. Ammon in a vision shortly after he inherited the diary. He believes Mammon has been lying dormant in the males of his family for eons, can you imagine? And when you examine everything, it becomes obvious. The ruthless ambition, the relentless acquisition of power. Mr. Ammon's whole family history is a rogue's gallery of notorious villains. It's very impressive. If you have the opportunity, you should ask Mr. Ammon about it. I'm sure he would enjoy telling you his history. It's fascinating, fascinating. Mr. Ammon is quite taken with you, you know. He speaks of you often."
"Because I have the ability to identify the Avaritia stone."
"No, no. Mr. Ammon is certain he'll recognize the stone once it's uncovered, although you were helpful in finding the various pieces of the coin. I must admit, we couldn't have done that without you, and goodness, it wasn't as if we hadn't tried."
Rutherford rocked back on his heels, smiling wide.
"Here's the fun part of the equation. Mr. Ammon is a big fan of your cupcakes."
It took a moment for this to compute in my head. I'd pretty much forgotten about the cupcakes.
"I can see you're surprised at this,"
Rutherford said, doing a lot more smiling.
"Mr. Ammon is multifaceted. He's a shrewd businessman, and he knows a good product when he sees it. True, he inherited much of his wealth, but he also made many, many excellent deals on his own, and he has his eye on you. You're a lucky woman. I suspect you'll get rich and famous under the Ammon brand. Of course, it will be necessary for you to embrace our Lord Mammon, but I'm sure you'll find that quite painless. We're a happy, fun-loving group. Though, now that I think about it, there's the possibility of a sacrifice. But again, that shouldn't be too painful."
Someone whistled from far above us.
"We're sending her down," they shouted.
I looked up and was blinded by the spotlight. I shaded my eyes and saw something descending, dangling from a rope. It was something in a short pink tutu-type skirt, black motorcycle boots, and an orange thong. It was Glow.
"We thought she might be useful," Rutherford said. "We understand that you have a special ability to find the stone, but this one seems to also have strange powers. There's a rumor that she can cast spells and see into the future."
Double, oh boy. Glow had a book of spells that never worked as they should, and a magic eight ball she got at a yard sale. She was strapped into a harness that was attached to the rope. Her tote bag was slung over her shoulder. Broom was tucked into the tote bag. "What the heck?" she said when her feet touched granite and she was able to stand. I thought, "what the heck?" about summed it all up. Beyond that, I didn't know what to think. "They kidnapped me when I wasn't looking," Glow said. She glanced at the body sprawled on the floor of the cave. "Whoa."
It's Devereaux, I said. He slipped and fell.
He's not moving.
It's a permanent condition.
He's paralyzed?
He's dead, I told her.
Bummer, Glow said. Do you want me to say some words? I'm an ordained minister. I even have a certificate.
What church? I asked her.
The Church of the Barley Goddess.
I don't think that's a real church.
They have a website, Glow said. The World Wide Web wouldn't allow them on there if they weren't real.
I suppose it wouldn't hurt, I said.
I'm sure Mr. Ammon wouldn't mind if we took a moment, Rutherford said.
Glow bowed her head.
We commend the spirit of Quentin Devereaux to you, great old ones and new sprouts. Give him safe passage to the afterlife, and if there's reincarnation, we hope he doesn't come back as a snail or a spider because they're icky.
Everyone said amen and looked to Rutherford for direction.
Now that we have that solemn task behind us, we can move forward, Rutherford said, going into jolly mode. Mr. Carter can lead the way.
Mr. Carter tentatively stepped into the downward sloping tunnel, and we all followed single file. Everyone but Glow had a flashlight. The tunnel was tight, and the man in front of me had to stoop. I had the diamond in my jeans pocket and could see its glow through the denim fabric. We shuffled along in the dark for what seemed like forever, and then, almost like a mirage, there was light in front of us. Not enough light to make me believe we were going to be standing in an open field, but enough light to make me think we were coming to the end of the tunnel. Minutes later, we stepped out into a massive cavern with a vast underground lake. Vents in the rock ceiling high above us beamed down shafts of sunlight. Wooden pilings and a few rotting boards jutted out into the water, the remnants of an old dock. Beyond the boards, I could see an outcropping of rock and the tip of another dilapidated structure. The diamond was blinking and flashing in my pocket, and I could feel the heat it was generating.
We're close, Rutherford said. My goodness, this is a thrill.
I walked along the edge of the lake to the small mountain of rocks and stopped. The diamond had begun to hum, but I was at a dead end.
It's on the other side of this jumble of rocks, Rutherford said to me. Climb up on it.
He gestured with his hands.
Up, up, up.
Glow had her magic eight ball out.
Signs point to maybe, she said.
Maybe what? I asked her. Maybe only a mountain goat could climb up on those rocks?
Mr. Carter will help you, Rutherford said cheerfully. He's quite the athlete. Mr. Carter was a Marine.
I clenched my teeth and followed Carter as he picked his way over the rubble. Glow followed me, and everyone else followed Glow. The chunk of solid granite and loose rock was 20 to 30 feet high, and progress was slow. When we finally reached the top of the mound, we looked down on the remains of a tall ship that had been beached in a small alcove. It was tipped on its side, the masts were broken off and resting on the shore, and much of the timber was rotted. It was like discovering the bones of a giant prehistoric beast. We inched our way down to the shore, slipping and sliding on loose rock and crawling over the larger boulders. I approached the ship, and the diamond continued to hum and blink. Still no sign of Diesel or Wolf, and I was feeling some anxiety. I felt certain that they were safe. I'd been told many times that they were hard to kill. My anxiety came from the fact that we were close to the stone and I had no way to stop Rutherford from taking it. I could refuse to cooperate any further, but Glow is here now, and I suspected Rutherford might use her to make me stay on target. I suspected behind all the annoying, smiling good cheer, Rutherford was an insecure toad who would do anything to gain favor with his boss. If he had to slit my throat, I was sure he would wipe his sweaty hands on his pants, plaster a smile on his face, and do it. Rutherford sent two of the armed men up the underside of the ship, over the keel, and into the bowels of the wreck. We lost sight of them, but we listened to the wood creaking under their weight as they progressed through the ship. We heard a board snap, and there was silence. Rutherford looked at his watch. I looked at my watch, too, but I'd scratched the crystal on the slide down, and it was difficult to read. After a couple beats, we heard faint scuffing sounds. The men were back at work. What does your magic eight ball say now? I asked Glow.
Tinkle, tinkle, little star, I wonder where the bathrooms are, Glow said.
One of the men on the ship popped into sight.
We found the treasure, he called down to us. It's scattered around the captain's quarters.
Up and over, Rutherford cheerfully said to me.
I stared at the keel looming above my head.
Not going to happen, I said. There has to be another way to get on.
Yes, yes, of course. We can find another way, Rutherford said. I would have difficulty with that route as well.
We walked around the ship to where a gunwale was resting on the mix of sand and stone. A lot of this part of the ship was rotted, but I managed to climb around the rot on the slanted deck. I dropped through the hatch and into the salon with the help of the man who was already in place. Everyone else followed. The interior was all sideways and cattywampus. The stairs were on the wall, and the hallway led downward to an intricately engraved door. I made my way to the door and stepped into the captain's cabin. The ornate furnishings were tumbled over, but the elegant carving and gold inlays were intact. Light filtered into the room from the large bay window that filled the stern wall. We all looked up at the name carved above the window, Ganji Isawa.
This is the gunsway, Rutherford said. At one time, there must have been a way to sail into here. We've circled the island several times in the past and never found an entrance.
In the movies, they blow up the entrance after they sail in so no one can find it, Glow said.
Rutherford looked like he wanted to hit her on the head with his flashlight.
That must be it, he said.
I crossed the tilted room to a huge overturned table and peered over the edge. The area behind the table was littered with gold and silver coins, jewelry, raw jewels, miniature icons, elaborate little bottles with stoppers, and carved gold platters. They had obviously spilled out of a heavy oak chest that had been smashed open. A skeleton was sprawled next to the chest. Bits of cloth clung to the yellowed bones, a filthy white wig lay next to the skull, and the man's boots were still attached to his feet.
Most likely this is Palgrave Bellows, Rutherford said. Those boots would have been very fancy back in the day.
My attention wasn't on his boots. My attention was drawn to the egg-sized rock in the man's hand.
Pry the stone out of his fingers, Rutherford said to me. Tell me if this is the holy stone of Mammon.
I attempted to take the stone away from the corpse and accidentally snapped off two of his fingers. I gagged and broke out in a sweat.
Oh my, Rutherford said, squeezing out a nugget of nervous laughter. That was something. They snapped right away.
He shifted foot to foot.
Well, go ahead and pick it up. We have a schedule to keep. Let's see if this is the right stone.
I could feel the sweat trickle down my breastbone. The finger bones were still curled around the stone.
Let's see, Rutherford said. How can I make this easier for you? Oh, I know. We could distract you by shooting your friend. Nothing fatal, of course.
Don't worry, Lizzie, Glow said. Broom would never allow it.
Broom was still stuck in Glow's tote bag. I wasn't sure I could count on Broom to save the day, so I sucked in some air and picked the stone up. It glowed green and hummed in my hand.
I can tell from the expression on your face that this is the holy stone, Rutherford said. This is the stone that will awaken Mammon.
And that would be Martin Ammon, right? I asked. Why isn't he with you?
Mr. Ammon is a busy, very, very important man. He can't be everywhere at once.
I bet he's in a kennel, Glow said. I swear it was an honest mistake. The page just sort of turned itself.
A kennel?
Rutherford clasped his hands together.
Oh, that's a good one.
So he doesn't still think he's a dog? Glow asked.
A dog? Goodness, no. No. He's just fine. An occasional lapse, perhaps, but nothing serious. Nothing to worry about.
Rutherford took the stone from me and put it in a thick leather pouch he'd obviously brought for the occasion. He attached the pouch to his wrist and tested it to make sure it was secure.
We need to pack as much of the treasure as we can carry out of here, Rutherford said to his crew. We can come back some other time for whatever is left behind. Right now, I need to rush this stone to Mr. Ammon. I'm going to take the first helicopter out. By the time it returns, I trust you'll have staged the most important items at the rim. Mr. Carter will be in charge of securing the ladies.
Chapter 18. Mr. Carter was balanced on the slanted floor of the ship, standing just in front of a trap door. He reached down and flipped the door open, and a dank odor of wood rot and seawater filled the room.
How convenient, Carter said, shining his flashlight into the dark hold. Chains for two.
He looked over at me.
Ladies first.
I don't think so, I said. I'll pass.
I haven't got time to play, Carter said, motioning to the two remaining men with his gun. Take him down and chain him.
I'm not really into the whole chain thing, Glow said. I'd actually rather be a hostage.
I was told to secure you, and that's what I'm going to do.
He might not have meant that literally, I said to Carter. He might have meant you should keep us safe.
That's exactly what I'm going to do, he said. I'm going to keep you safely secured so we can do our job.
One of the men dropped into the hold, and another shoved Glow forward toward the trap door. Glow whacked the man with broom. The man grabbed broom away from Glow and threw Glow and broom into the hold. The second man followed Glow through the trap door. I heard splashing and shrieking and then a horrible quiet. After a couple beats, a second man climbed out of the hold. He was soaking wet.
You're next, Carter said to me. You can voluntarily join your friend or you can do it the hard way.
I lowered myself through the trap door and dropped into waist-high water. The second man splashed in after me. In the dim light, I saw Glow chained by her wrists to the rough plank wall. There were several more sets of wrist chains. One of the sets of chains had a partial skeleton attached. The water in the hold was black and the footing was treacherous. A man had me by my arm, guiding me to a set of chains, keeping me upright. The cuffs were snapped around my wrists, and a second man tugged on the chains to make sure they were strong. The men sloshed away without a word, hoisted themselves out of the water, and disappeared through the trap door. The door slammed shut, and Glow and I were alone in the hold. It took a moment for my eyes to adjust to the dark. A small amount of light filtered through cracks in the captain's quarters floorboards, and further down in the bowels of the ship, I could see a gash in the side of the boat. Water and light flowed through the gash.
I really hate this, Glow said. The water is ruining my vintage skirt. It's not like these skirts grow on trees. And I don't know what happened to Broom. He's probably terrified. They just threw him down here.
As if on cue, Broom floated past us without so much as a backward glance and disappeared through the hole in the hold.
He's probably going for help, Glow said.
No doubt. I'm sure we'll be rescued any minute now. A rat swam by, climbed onto a timber about 3 feet from me, and scurried away. I heard myself whimper, and I pulled against my chains.
I'm starting to feel a little hysterical, Glow said. I think I peed myself when the rat swam by.
That could be good, I said. It could drive him away. Can you wiggle your chains?
No. Can you?
No. I looked down at the water. It was rising. It was now at chest level. The tide was coming in. The underground lake was a tidal pool, and somewhere on the island it became part of the sea.
Either I'm getting shorter, or the water is getting taller, Glow said. It's almost up to my chin, and I'm cold.
Maybe we should sing a song to keep our spirits up, I said.
Row, row, row your boat, Glow sang out.
I couldn't see my watch. But it seemed to me we sang Row, Row, Row Your Boat for about 10 minutes. My teeth were chattering and my nose was running from fear and cold. My hands were numb in the rusted iron cuffs. I knew eventually Diesel and Wolf would find us, but I worried they wouldn't get to us in time.
I'm getting tired, Glow said. I'm standing on my tiptoes and the water is almost up to my mouth. I don't want to die. I have stuff to do. I need to get my nails done. I need to punch Josh in the face. I haven't tried all the Ben and Jerry's ice cream flavors yet.
I had a lot of unfinished business, too, but I didn't want to think about it. It was too sad, too terrible to go through the list.
They're coming to get me, Glow said. I'm done for. I hear the angels. They're walking around on the deck.
I don't think you can hear angels walking, I said. They have wings. They flutter.
Well, I hear something up there.
We went still and listened. Creak, crack. Diesel fell through the rotted deck, splashed into the water, and resurfaced in front of me.
Crap on a cracker, Glow said.
Diesel grabbed the iron bands on my wrists and the cuffs unlocked.
He did the same for Glow. I swam to the trap door. Diesel shoved it open and boosted Glow through. A beat later, I was on the dry, slanted floor of the captain's quarters, and Diesel was next to me. I had a disorienting feeling that I was still chained, that the rusted cuffs were still in place. I looked down and saw that it was Diesel's hand I felt firmly wrapped around my wrist.
"I don't scare easily," Diesel said, "but these last couple hours were a 10 when we couldn't find you."
I blinked away tears and took a deep breath. It was all okay. Glow hadn't drowned. The rats hadn't gotten to us. Diesel had been worried about me, and now I was safe beside him. "I knew you would find me," I said.
"Honey, it wasn't easy. We had to swim to shore, towing Hatchet because he can't swim. Then we had to steal a boat so we could locate Devereaux's boat. Fortunately, Josh found us just as we were shoving off, and he took us to the cove where Devereaux's boat was beached. After that, it was the blind leading the blind since none of us was born with a tracking gene. We saw the helicopter land and started to climb toward the helicopter, but it took off before we reached it. I stepped out onto a rock ledge, looked down at the water, and saw something floating. My first fear was that it was a body, but it turned out to be Broom.
I told you he went for help, Glow said.
Long story short, since we weren't having any luck bushwhacking on the island, we decided to go with the hunch that there was a cave with water access, and that the cave was the logical place to hide treasure. We took the boat to the area where Broom was floating, saw that there was a strong current under a rock overhang, and here I am.
The diamond led us to a tunnel that started at a high part of the island, I said to Diesel. Rutherford spotted us from the air and followed us in. Devereaux fell to his death attempting to shoot Rutherford, and then Rutherford and his gang forced me to take them to the treasure. They got the Seligia stone and left us to die.
Was Martin Ammon with them?
No. Rutherford said he was too busy to be part of this treasure hunt, but I think he's still having an occasional lapse into Bow Wow land.
How'd Glow get here?
Rutherford brought her. He thought she'd be useful casting spells and whatever.
How'd that work out?
There was a rat in the water, Glow said.
Diesel stood and pulled me to my feet. We got Glow standing up, and Diesel spotted the skeleton. Best guess is it's Palgrave Bellows, I said. I had to pry the Seligia stone out of his hand. Diesel hooked his finger into the empty eye socket and lifted the skull off the floor.
We'll take this with us so Nurgle can talk to it.
Glow found her tote bag and hung it on her shoulder, and Diesel put the skull in it.
Is Broom okay? Glow asked. Were you able to rescue him?
He's in the boat with Wolf and Josh.
We clambered down from the ship and stood on the rocks. The sand was covered by the high tide.
The fastest way out is by water, Diesel said. I'm going to tow you out one at a time. There's about a 2-foot clearance between the water and the ledge, so watch your head.
He took Glow out first and returned for me. I closed my eyes when we passed under the ledge and opened them when a wave crashed over us. Ordinarily, I'm a strong swimmer, but I was cold and exhausted and happy to have Diesel ferry me to the boat that was bobbing beyond the surf. They'd stolen a center console similar to the boat Devereaux had used. Josh was hunched on a bench seat, dabbing at a bloody nose. Glow was glaring at him from midship. No explanation needed. That one was easy to figure out. No sign of Hatchet. Diesel hauled himself out of the water. Wolf powered up the boat and steered around the island to the beach party. I thought we'd be heading for home, I said to Diesel.
We have a helicopter picking us up. Apparently there's a flat patch of land that can be used as a helipad, and it's not far from the beach party. This isn't the off-the-charts island we expected.
Wolf anchored in shallow water, and we all slogged ashore. Hatchet was waiting at the water's edge, and he was naked, with the exception of his sword, which was in its scabbard and hung around his waist. He looked like a blob of marshmallow with stick legs and droopy doodles. Wolf had his usual poker face. Diesel burst out laughing, and I thought I was going to have to pour bleach in my eyes to erase the sight.
"Welcome, sire," Hatchet said to Wolf. "The bird has not yet arrived."
At least he has his sword sheathed, Glow said.
I thought it best not to call attention to myself by being clothed, Hatchet said to Wolf. If you are displeased, you can whip me. I'll make a switch from a tree branch. I live to serve you.
Lucky you, Diesel said to Wolf.
This is my cross to bear, Wolf said.
Sadly, my garb hath disappeared, Hatchet said. These wrinkled old folk have a mischievous side.
A helicopter buzzed the beach and disappeared behind a rock-strewn hill topped with a clump of trees. The beach party looked like it was winding down. The band was packing up, and the tiki hut was no longer serving drinks. Some of the partiers were sprawled on the beach, soaking up the last of the sun, and the rest were standing in small groups talking. They were still naked, and none of them were getting any younger. I saw a lot of gray hair, no hair, and skin cancer. The ravages of gravity on the human body over the years was sobering. Several people waved to Hatchet when we crossed the beach to get to the helipad.
Hey, Hatchet, one of the men yelled. How's it hanging?
Yoo-hoo, Hatchet, honey, a little white-haired lady called out. Come over here and show us your sword.
They be a wild and rowdy crowd, Hatchet said.
We reached the helicopter, and Hatchet got in first, giving us a view of the Grand Canyon when he bent over to take a seat. I'm not sitting next to him, I said to Diesel.
Me either, Glow said.
Me either, Josh said.
Wolf reached in and yanked Hatchet out of the helicopter. The pilot wiped the seat down with hand sanitizer and sprayed the cabin with air freshener. When we lifted off, Hatchet was on the ground waving to us and shouting farewell. Will he be okay? I asked Wolf. He has no clothes and no money.
He's quite resourceful, Wolf said. He'll be fine.
It was dark when Diesel and I got home. We let ourselves in and went to the kitchen. Cat was on the counter gnawing on a chicken pot pie. Carl was eating peanut butter out of the jar with his finger. Cabinet doors were open and cereal boxes were on the floor. Looks like Carl made dinner, I said. Carl looked over and smiled. Diesel put the skull in the microwave for safekeeping.
First thing tomorrow, we'll visit Nurgle.
I'm not sure we'll learn anything of value, I said. This guy's been dead for hundreds of years, and the real task we have now is finding Martin Ammon and relieving him of the stone.
You never know, Diesel said. It could be interesting. You said you had to pry the stone out of his hand.
A chill ran down my spine at the memory. It was creepy. I broke off two of his fingers. My clothes were still damp and caked with sea salt. My shoes squished when I walked, and I was starving. I made a cheese sandwich, told Diesel he was on his own, and took my sandwich upstairs with me. I locked myself in my bathroom and peeled my clothes off while I ate the sandwich. I stepped under a scalding hot shower, closed my eyes, and thought I was in heaven. I opened my eyes when Diesel stepped into the shower with me. Hey, I said, this is my shower.
Not anymore, Diesel said. Now it's our shower.
Diesel poured some of my shower gel into his hands and worked up a lather.
This smells nice, Diesel said.
It used to smell like lemon, but now it smells like cookies baking. How do you do that?
I don't do it. It just happens.
He ran his soapy hands over my shoulders and down my arms. Stop that, I said. No fooling around.
I'm not fooling, Diesel said. I'm deadly serious.
Chapter 19. I dragged myself out of bed at 5 a.m. My day had barely started, and already I was late. I dressed in the dark so I wouldn't wake Diesel. Cat followed me down the stairs to the kitchen. I gave him fresh water and filled his bowl with kitty crunchies. I grabbed an apple and headed out. The street was quiet, but lights were blinking on in some of the houses. A car pulled into the parking lot for the shipyard at the bottom of my hill. Clara was already at work when I got to the bakery. The big dough mixer was humming, and flour hung in the air like fairy dust.
How'd it go yesterday? Clara asked.
First off, Josh and Devereaux broke into my house and stole the map and the coin, I said. We all raced to Penobscot Bay to see who could get there first and get the finder, which turned out to be the cursed blue diamond of Babur. We got the diamond, but Devereaux blew our boat up with a rocket. Then Devereaux kidnapped me, and we went looking for the treasure. In the meantime, Rutherford kidnapped Glow, tracked us down, and followed us into the cave. Devereaux fell to his death, we found the treasure, which included the Seligia stone, and Rutherford left Glow and me to die in the brig of a pirate ship. Diesel rescued us, and here I am.
So, same old, Clara said.
I buttoned myself into my white chef coat. Pretty much.
It's disappointing that Josh was working with Devereaux to steal the treasure, Clara said. I guess you never know about people.
It turned out that Devereaux was a really bad guy in disguise. Or maybe he changed when he took possession of the coin. At any rate, he was definitely insane at the time of death. I think Josh was just stupid. In the end, Josh tried to help rescue Glow and me.
Was Glow impressed with that?
She punched him in the nose the first chance she got. When we dropped them off here last night, she still wasn't talking to him.
Good for her, Clara said.
Glow arrived a little before 9. She parked Broom in a kitchen corner and set her magic 8-ball and tote bag on a workbench.
I've been asking the magic 8-ball questions all morning, Glow said, but it always has the same message. I think it might be waterlogged.
What's the message? Clara asked.
Outlook not so good, Glow said.
Lucky thing I don't believe in the magic 8-ball, or I might be depressed.
Are you still seeing Josh? Clara asked Glow.
Glow shook the 8-ball, and the message floated to the surface.
Outlook not so good.
Diesel sauntered in at 11 o'clock. He helped himself to a blueberry muffin and perched on a stool by my workstation.
What's new? Diesel asked.
I need to finish glazing these cinnamon rolls, and then I'm done for the day.
Diesel grinned.
Do you want me to help?
No.
You'll never guess what I found this morning, Diesel said. You left your wet clothes on the floor in the bathroom, and when I kicked them aside, the blue diamond fell out of your jeans pocket.
Oh my gosh, I stuffed it into my pocket and forgot about it.
I'm sure Rutherford had a dark moment when he realized he'd left it behind. It's invaluable.
I don't think Rutherford knew about the diamond, I said.
Can you glaze those things faster? We have a lot of ground to cover today, Diesel said.
Do you have a game plan?
I want to talk to Nurgle. I have the skull with me.
And after that?
No plan.
So that doesn't seem to be a lot of ground.
I'm working on it.
I finished my tray, cleaned my area, and asked Clara if she had anything else for me to do.
Nope, she said. It's a slow Monday. You might as well take off.
We stepped out of the bakery, and I looked around.
Where's your car? I asked Diesel.
It's a little black one, he said.
That's a Porsche 911 Turbo. What happened to the last car?
It got swapped out. I parked it in front of your house last night, and this morning it was gone, and the Porsche was parked there.
How do you know it's yours?
My cars always have similar license plates. DD0000, or some variation.
We drove the short distance to the hospital and found Nurgle in his office.
We brought you something, Diesel told him. I hope it's cupcakes.
Sorry, no cupcakes, I said.
It's something dead, isn't it? Nurgle said. What is it with you people? You're like the death squad.
This from the man who decided to be a coroner. Diesel pulled the skull out of his battered brown leather backpack and put it on Nurgle's desk.
I didn't have room to bring the rest of him home with me, Diesel said. But this is probably all you need. We think he's Palgrave Bellows.
Nurgle leaned forward and took a closer look at the skull.
The real Palgrave Bellows? That's pretty cool.
I nodded in agreement.
We found him in a cave.
Nurgle put his hand on the skull, and his eyes got wide.
Whoa, this guy is nutty.
What's he saying to you?
He's saying that it all makes sense, that it's all fallen into place, that he knew the power was within him, that he was destined to become the demon Mammon, and now he's going to eliminate all disbelievers and rule the world, that he's sure the crushing pain in his chest is Mammon being reborn in his body.
Nurgle removed his hand from the skull.
Personally, my money's on massive heart attack over the Mammon reborn theory.
You get anything else from him? Diesel asked.
Nope, that's it. Can I keep the skull?
Sure, Diesel said.
Maybe someday I'll bring you the rest of him.
Neither of us said anything until we were out of the building and back in the Porsche.
Bellows was holding the stone when he died, I said to Diesel. It sounds to me like the stone makes you go nutty with the whole greed and mammon thing. Devereaux had a similar reaction when he got the entire coin in his pocket.
Where's the coin now? Diesel asked me.
So far as I know, it's still with Devereaux. He had the coin on him when he fell. I suppose Rutherford or one of his men could have picked it up on their way out of the cave, but no one mentioned it when they were gathering up the treasure pieces, and I have a feeling it was forgotten.
And the diary?
Ammon has the diary locked away somewhere, probably in Marblehead.
I see a road trip in my future.
We're going back to the island?
Me, not you. I can do this faster on my own. I want to get there before Ammon or Rutherford or whoever is running the show decides to send his minions back for the rest of the treasure.
I don't think Rutherford runs anything. I think he's in damage control mode, hanging on by his fingernails. I can tell you how to get to the tunnel. It might be easier than using the water entrance. Devereaux and I crept down a dangerous staircase carved out of the rock face. Rutherford and his men rappelled down. It was quicker and safer. Devereaux is at the bottom of the staircase. Another narrow tunnel connects the staircase to the cave and underground lake. An hour later, Kat, Carl, and I watched Diesel drive off. "Just the three of us today," I said to Kat and Carl. "What should we do? Clean the house?" Kat pretended not to hear, and Carl climbed onto the couch and turned the television on. I was halfway through vacuuming the living room rug when there was a lot of commotion on my front stoop, and someone kicked my door down. It wasn't difficult to do because the door was showing a couple hundred years of dry rot and the lock was equally ancient. Rutherford crept in around the mangled door.
"Hello," he called. "Anybody home?"
"Yes, I'm home. What the heck do you think you're doing breaking my door down? That's a historic door. You'll be in big trouble with the historical commission."
I knocked, but no one answered.
"I was vacuuming. I didn't hear you."
"Yes, yes, I can see that. I'll have Mr. Ammon square it with the Historical Commission. Mr. Ammon is a big contributor."
"I guess that would be okay," I said, inching my way toward the kitchen, where I had a big carving knife.
"I must say, I'm relieved to see you somehow escaped from the cave. That was a mistake on my part. I should have been more clear with my directions to Mr. Carter. I meant for him to safely see you to the top of the canyon. When we realized the error, we returned, but you were already gone. Very clever of you to take matters into your own hands. As you know, Mr. Ammon has plans for you. He just loves your cupcakes, and you'll play a very large role in our future."
"So you came to apologize?"
"Yes, yes, of course. But there is one other issue. It's the coin. We don't seem to have the coin."
"Devereaux had the coin."
"Mr. Carter assures me that the coin wasn't on Devereaux. Of course, Mr. Carter is no longer with us. He's been, reassigned. But we feel confident that the coin was removed."
"Not by me," I said. "I don't have the coin."
"I totally believe you, totally. But I'm sure you realize how important this coin is to our Lord Mammon. We must have all essential elements to complete the awakening ceremony, and the coin seems to be one of those elements."
"You realize this is all nuts, right?"
"Nuts. No, no, I assure you, it's not nuts. Mr. Ammon has fully researched this. He's had a vision."
"And you believe Mr. Ammon?"
"Of course, totally."
"And you believe in Mammon?"
"Ah, Mammon. Yes, he is the prince."
"Well, I'm sorry, but the prince is going to have to wake up without the coin because I don't have it." Rutherford was smiling and sweating.
"That would be lovely. We would all like for that to happen, but it might not be possible. So you're going to have to bring the coin to us. You're the only one who can recognize it. Mr. Ammon is very set on this. I know this is going to sound extreme, but you must keep in mind the importance of the ceremony. I'm afraid we will be forced to wreak havoc if you don't bring us the coin. I admit that havoc is a very strong word, but Mr. Ammon has been quite specific about this."
"Can you explain havoc?"
"My understanding is that it would involve torture and death, possibly mutilation."
Rutherford took a photo out of his suit jacket and handed it to me.
"As you can see, this is a picture of the elderly gentleman related to your boss. I believe he's her grandfather?"
It was a picture of Gramps waving at the camera. Two armed men in suits were standing behind him. Their faces had been blotted out.
"He's a character," Rutherford said. "You never know what he'll say. Very entertaining. I would feel terrible if we had to cut his ear off."
"That's disgusting."
"It is, I absolutely agree. But we must do what we must do. Responsibility is a heavy burden."
He clapped his hands together.
"I guess that about sums it up. I should be leaving so you can get on with it."
"How do I reach you?"
"I've sent contact information to your cell phone."
I watched him leave and saw that there were several men in suits standing at attention by an SUV. Rutherford got in. His thugs followed. I had a range of emotions wash over me. They were jumbled and hard to identify individually, but anger was clearly at the top of the list. I was angry that Rutherford would kidnap Gramps, and I was angry that I was involved. Diesel was wrong. I didn't like the adventure. I liked dull and boring. I wanted my life to be pleasant. I wanted Gramps' life to be pleasant. Hell, I wanted the world to be pleasant. Sitting side by side with the anger was ice-cold, heart-grabbing fear. Because I knew Rutherford and Ammon were dangerous and capable of just about anything, and I suspected that the stone was slowly turning them from merely dangerous into crazy psychopaths. I took a look at my door and blew out a sigh. The jamb was splintered, and there was a long crack running from the doorknob almost to the bottom of the door. I managed to get the door to stay closed, but I couldn't lock it, as if it mattered. One good kick and the door was toast. "We need a plan," I said to Carl and Kat. "Hopefully Diesel will be back with the coin before they hurt Gramps. In the meantime, I need to keep everyone else safe." I called Clara, gave her the short version of what was happening, and asked her to check on Gramps just to make sure he'd truly been snatched. Glow had already left the bakery, so I tried her cell phone. No answer. I called Diesel. No answer there, either. I was tempted to get in touch with Wolf, but I had no idea where to begin. I didn't know his phone number or where he lived. And you know it was a scary day in hell when I was thinking about asking Wolf for help. I finished vacuuming and was contemplating laundry when Glow called.
"The Pirate Museum is on fire," Glow said. "I'm half a block away. I can't get any closer. I hope Josh is okay. I'm still mad at him, but I hope he's out of the building. I tried his phone and he isn't answering."
"Rutherford and Ammon are on a rampage and you could be in danger," I told Glow. "Go back to the bakery and stay with Clara until I get there." I poured out a big bowl of kitty crunchies and set an extra water bowl on the floor for Kat. "I'm going to leave the kitchen window open," I told him. "Do not guard the house. If someone breaks in, I want you to jump out the window and hide. I probably won't be back tonight. I'm going to stay with Clara and Glow." I threw extra undies, my sweatshirt, and my toothbrush into my tote bag, along with all the usual junk I always carry. I hung the bag on my shoulder, grabbed Carl, and went out the back door. I drove to the bakery and saw the black smoke from the Pirate Museum when I rolled into Salem. In my gut, I knew Rutherford had started the fire, either to smoke Josh out or to send me another scary message. Most likely it was both of those things. Lights were on in the bakery when I parked in the lot. Clara opened the door for Carl and me and closed and locked it after we were safely inside. She had an assault rifle hanging from her shoulder and a semi-automatic handgun shoved into her jeans waistband. "I didn't know you were a gun person," I said to Clara.
"The Dazzles have been locked and loaded since before the revolution."
"Did you check on Gramps?"
"Yes. He's not at home, and he's not with his caregiver."
Glow was perched on a stool.
"These people are sick," she said. "Gramps is such a sweetie. I hate to think he was kidnapped. Did you tell the police?"
Clara and I exchanged glances.
"Not yet," I said.
I was hoping Diesel would return with the coin and we could make a trade. I'd rather not explain this whole bizarre mess to the police. I doubt they would even believe me. Martin Ammon has money and power, and I just have cupcakes.
"Yes, but they aren't ordinary cupcakes," Glow said. "Your cupcakes are extraordinary."
"Yeah, I don't want to have to explain that to the police either," I said. Baking exceptional cupcakes, it turns out, is my other ability that is slightly beyond normal. So I wasn't kidding when I told Ammon that the ingredient I'd left out of the cupcakes recipe was magic. There was a lot of loud banging on the front door to the bakery, and Glow went to investigate.
"It's Josh," she said, unlocking the door and letting him in.
Josh was soot-smudged and sweaty. His puffy pirate shirt was untucked and streaked with black grime. His striped pants had a hole in the knee, and his hair was an unruly mess.
"They're freaking crazy," Josh said. "They set a match to the Pirate Museum. I barely got out alive. Had to crawl out the basement window."
Broom smacked Josh in the head.
"Ow," Josh said. "That hurt."
It was Broom, Glow said. It was you, Josh said. You're holding Broom. Were you the only one in the museum? I asked him.
Yes, the museum manager got a call to pick up a package, so I shut the doors for a spell. Too difficult to run the show alone. It's a slow time for us anyway. People are thinking about dinner and not pirates. It picks up again when the ghost tour starts.
How did the fire start?
Josh got whacked with the broom again.
Okay, I get it, Josh said to Glow. You're mad at me. I'm sorry. I was a jerk. I don't know what the heck I was thinking.
About the fire, I said. We were all locked up, but someone was knocking and knocking and knocking, and like an idiot, I went to the door. It was three guys in suits. They pushed me back into the museum, and one of them hit me on the head with his gun. When I came around, there was fire everywhere. Lucky I was near the trap door that goes to the basement. It's just a crawl space down there with the rats and the spiders, but I got to the small half window that's on the back alley side and managed to squeeze out. The police were out front and the fire trucks were pulling up, but all I could think of was putting distance between me and the men in suits. I figured they were lurking somewhere close, waiting until someone discovered my charred remains.
They kidnapped Clara's grandfather, Glow said.
That's horrible, Josh said. Is he okay?
We don't know, I said.
Rutherford called on my cell phone.
Good evening, he said. Mr. Ammon would like to speak to you.
There were some scuffling sounds, and Ammon came on the phone.
I trust you've heard the news by now that there was a fire at the Pirate Museum. I thought the symbolism was appropriate since we seem to have a theme of fire and brimstone. Ruff, ruff, excuse me, remnants of my concussion. I trust you're working hard to find the coin for me. We'll have a wonderful future together once you've found the coin. Oh!
More scuffling, and Rutherford took over.
Mr. Ammon has gone to get a cough drop, Rutherford said. But it sounds like the conversation went well. I have to say, I saw some of the fire at the museum, and it was spectacular. Did you get to see any of it?
No.
Well, there will be other opportunities. Mr. Ammon has a list of activities prepared to demonstrate his commitment to completing Mammon's holy ceremony.
More fires and kidnappings?
Very definitely. Mr. Ammon is still a bit under the weather from time to time, but he's a master at planning a campaign such as this. He would have made a wonderful general, a regular Napoleon.
There was some offstage growling and a muffled conversation.
One last thing, Rutherford said, returning to the phone. Mr. Ammon would like to order a dozen cupcakes, 6 chocolate and 6 red velvet with cream cheese icing. I'll send someone over to pick them up.
I disconnected, grabbed a cupcake container, and filled it with the dozen cupcakes. I wrote Martin Ammon on the container and set it out front next to the door. Gather up some food and kill the lights, I said to Clara, Josh, and Glow. We're going underground until Diesel returns. 5 minutes later, we locked the bakery, took the stairs to the storeroom, and moved into the tunnel. I pulled the shelves back in place so the tunnel entrance wasn't visible. Clara led the way with a big spotlight. Glow and I had smaller flashlights tucked into our tote bags. Carl skipped alongside me. Josh carried 2 large freezer bags filled with meat pies and muffins. We would be able to get water at the speakeasy.
These tunnels go for miles and miles under Salem, Clara said. The speakeasy is the most elaborate of the hidey holes, but there are storerooms and bunk rooms all over the place. Houses and office buildings have changed hands and been renovated, and the current owners probably have no idea they're living over tunnel entrances.
We reached the speakeasy and settled in, allowing ourselves light from just 1 light bulb in case Rutherford returned to Gramps' house.
We'll know if someone is in the house, Clara said. You can hear people walking overhead on the creaky floorboards, and if you climb the stairs and stand in front of the door, you might be able to get cell service.
We ate meat pies and played checkers. I tried to reach Diesel a couple times, but had no success. At 9 o'clock, Clara wanted to check on the bakery, so we left Josh and Glow and Carl at the speakeasy, and Clara led me through the tunnels to a trap door. We unlatched the door and popped up in a dark, musty shed that was housing a lawnmower.
This shed belongs to Myra Belcar, Clara said. It's a total wreck, and Myra would love to demolish it and put up a garage. Unfortunately for Myra, the shed is deemed historic, so she can't change it, and she can't tear it down.
We crept out of the unlocked shed and looked around. There were no streetlights on the narrow street. The small houses crammed into small pieces of land were in dark shadow. Lights were on in the houses. None had shades drawn. We could see Myra in her kitchen at the sink. The bakery was a block away. We walked to the corner and looked down the street. We didn't see any fire-blackened buildings, no fire trucks, no yellow crime scene tape, no lunatic Ammon employees hanging out. It all felt benign. I supposed Martin Ammon was happy with the cupcakes.
At least they didn't attack the bakery, Clara said. It would be painful to see it destroyed. My first instinct is to stand my ground and protect it, but I know that's not smart. It's just a building, after all. It can be rebuilt.
My phone chirped with a text message from Diesel. It was just one word. Success. He had the coin. I messaged back that there were problems and we'd gone underground. Look before you shoot, was his answer. I assumed that meant he'd try to find us. Clara and I retraced our steps and returned to the speakeasy. Josh and Carl were playing checkers in the dim light. Who's winning? I asked.
Carl is winning, Glow said. If we don't let him win, he pitches a tantrum and throws the checkers all around the room.
Chapter 20. When you're underground, the only way to know if it's day or night is to check your watch. And I imagine if you were underground long enough, even your watch wouldn't keep you from being disoriented. It was close to midnight when I fell asleep. I was on the floor using my tote bag as a pillow. I awoke at 5, drifted back into a restless sleep, and woke up again at 7. Glow was up and pacing, Josh was playing solitaire, and Carl was sprawled on top of a poker table, sound asleep. Where's Clara? I asked Glow.
In the tunnels. She said she needed exercise. Personally, I think it's a creepy place to go for a walk.
Not for Clara. She played in these tunnels when she was a kid, and she's probably freaked out that the bakery is closed. The bakery is never closed. Clara returned at 7:30, and moments later we heard someone walking overhead. We snapped the light off and froze. No one spoke. I looked at my cell phone. No bars. If it was Diesel upstairs looking for the entrance to the speakeasy, he couldn't reach me. I tiptoed to the stairs and crept up to the door. A text message flashed on from Diesel. Can't find entrance. I texted back, broom closet. A moment later, I heard the broom closet door open and mops in a bucket getting kicked around. I opened the secret door at the back of the closet, and Diesel handed me a cardboard box with 4 coffees from Starbucks.
Morning, Diesel said. You look like you got run over by a truck.
I slept on the floor last night.
There are these things in the house called beds, Diesel said.
We were afraid Rutherford and his men would return. They kidnapped Gramps, tried to kill Josh, and burned down the pirate museum.
I go away for a couple hours and the world falls apart, Diesel said.
Carl woke up at Diesel's voice. He stretched,